Good afternoon, Eastern Washington and fellow Patriots. This is Matt Shea, and welcome to Patriot Radio, broadcasting live from deep inside the heart of the future Liberty State, brought to you by On Fire Ministries. And I really want to thank everybody who came out on Sunday, packed house, for our first service. It was fantastic. Just thank you so much, everybody that came out. Wonderful time at the Mirabeau Hotel. And once again, this is in the legacy of Dr. Stan Monteith, bringing you the story behind the story and the news behind the news. It's not about right or left. It is about right and wrong. It's about our hope not being in man, but in Jesus Christ. And it is about not just praying, but moving to action, which in this time that we live in right now is becoming more and more critical as the hour grows late. And the hour is growing late. But that's why it's important at this exact moment to be preaching the gospel of the kingdom. Isaiah 61, 1 through 4, "The Spirit of the Lord God is upon me because the Lord anointed me to bring good news to the humble. He has sent me to bind up the brokenhearted, to proclaim release to the captives and freedom to prisoners, to proclaim the favorable year of the Lord and the day of vengeance of our God, to comfort all who mourn, to grant those who mourn in Zion, giving them a garland instead of ashes, the oil of gladness instead of mourning, the cloak of praise instead of a disheartened spirit. So they will be called oaks of righteousness, the planting of the Lord, that he may be glorified. Then they will rebuild the ancient ruins. They will raise up the former devastations, and they will repair the ruined cities, the desolations of many generations." Wow. Now, we have a packed agenda today. The guest today, retired Major General Donald McGregor, who has written a fantastic article about what the founders feared. So stay tuned for that. But first, your daily intelligence briefing from the international front. A couple of things. Very interesting. So Mohammed al-Zahar, the co-founder of Hamas, told Sky News in a rare interview at his Gaza home that Hamas's victory, they got crushed by the Israelis, actually, but okay. Hamas's victory was due to its ability to fire rockets into densely populated Israeli civilian areas. The interviewer, Sky's Middle East correspondent, Mark Stone, responded, "You are firing rockets into," in just a second, I don't know what that is, but "you are firing rockets into the civilian areas here in Gaza at civilians in Israel." So in other words, they're intentionally firing rockets from civilian areas into other civilian areas. That's not acceptable. That's a war crime. When Stone asked al-Zahar, "Do you accept that the state of Israel has a right to exist?" The Hamas leader, and this should not be a surprise, he reacted angrily. "No, why? Why? You're coming from America, and you take my house. You came from Britain, and you took my brother's house. What are you talking about, this guy?" Of course, it's the Hamas leader, and of course he denies Israel's right to exist. This article coming to us from Debka File. Check it out. A Palestinian also stabbed a civilian and an Israeli soldier in Jerusalem, and they're trying to shut down the Temple Mount right now from any sort of tourists or Israeli visitors. Read any Christians or Jews wanting to visit the Temple Mount. Hamas is just doing what Hamas was created to do. Why are we surprised at this? They need to be rooted out of everywhere they are in the United States. They need to be rooted out of everywhere they are in the world, because it's the Muslim Brotherhood once again rearing its ugly head, and they will not stop until they have a caliphate reestablished in the Middle East. And they have already said, their spiritual leader, al-Qardawi, has already said that Recep Erdogan, the head of Turkey, fits all of the qualifications of caliph. They're setting this up, everybody. It's crystal clear. And in addition to that, Recep Erdogan recently said that essentially Europe is an open-air prison, which is a veiled incitement of Muslims in Europe to begin jihad. This is why it's important you need to understand the enemy. And yes, they are the self-proclaimed enemy of Western civilization. They said it in the explanatory memorandum. They've said it in multiple other documents that were introduced into evidence in the Holy Land Foundation trial. We know this is a matter of fact. This isn't speculation, and anybody who tells you different is lying to you or has their head in the sand. This is super important, because what is happening now is, and we're going to get to this here in a second, is that this is coming now to the United States, and the Muslim Brotherhood in the United States has been activated, and we're starting to see it in various areas, specifically Texas. So, but we're going to get to that here in a second. Also on the national front, this coming to us from Project Veritas, Facebook whistleblowers expose leaked internal documents detailing new effort to secretly censor vaccine concerns on a global scale. Facebook has responded. We proactively announced this policy on our company blog and also updated our help center with this information. So in other words, they're trying to say, oh, not a secret. Two Facebook insiders have come forward with internal company documents detailing a plan to curb, quote, vaccine hesitancy, end quote, on a global scale. Let me put this into plain speak here. Facebook had a policy to essentially try to coerce people into taking a vaccination, which is really a gene therapy, and something that now many people are realizing is totally unneeded if the so-called statistics, by their own admission, there being the CDC's, show that this really isn't the fatal, drastic pandemic that they tried to claim all along. This is really a failed bioweapon that leaked from a lab in China, which yours truly has said consistently from day one over a year ago. What's interesting is one of the other quotes here. Quote, they're trying to control this content before it even makes it onto your page, before you even see it, end quote. Quote, if I lose my job, it's like, what do I do? But that's less of a concern for me, end quote. So one of the whistleblowers. Quote, it doesn't match the narrative. The narrative being, get the vaccine. The vaccine is good for you. Everyone should get it. And if you don't, you will be singled out, end quote. See, this is just going to further prove that they're using the so-called COVID pandemic to implement control mechanisms for a totally different and even bigger and even more insidious evil agenda. Crystal clear. All right. Now, a couple other things. Going to the national front, this coming to us from the New American, the Washington Post, the China virus lab theory is now, quote, credible, end quote. Ooh, this is what we've been talking about for over a year. That it was very clear there were markers and indicators that showed that this was not a naturally occurring virus. It's some sort of manipulation, modification occurred. And this is the same, whatever you want to call it, media outlet, fake news outlet, that said last year, ridiculed GOP senators for saying it. Even though there was very compelling evidence at that time, there were whistleblowers at that time, there was a very clear trail at that time back to the Wuhan lab. So once again, the people who are paying attention, who are following the primary source documents, who understand what the evil agenda is out there, the conspiracy against the Republic and the Constitution, we have been vindicated again. Now, I'm going to jump back out to the international front, back to Israel. This coming to us from WorldNet Daily. Netanyahu blasts Iran deal in front of Biden's Secretary of State. Quote, Israel will defend itself against a regime committed to our destruction, end quote. So Israel is back to going it alone in the Middle East. Quote, the deal paves the way for Iran to have an arsenal of nuclear weapons with international legitimacy, end quote, Netanyahu said at a press conference held with the U.S. Secretary of State, Antony Blinken. Obviously, that's what's going on. And this new bloc is attacking Israel and the United States. And we've talked about this. This new bloc, Turkey and Iran, the Muslim Brotherhood, which is operating out of Turkey, and the Iranians are now attacking on two separate fronts. And of course, Israel has a right to defend itself. It's its own sovereign nation. I find it fascinating, though, that within 80 years of World War II, we're having the exact same discussions. Now, this brings us back to the national front. Biden brings in Islamic activists to investigate U.S. military for extremism. This is coming to us from Jihad Watch. Daniel Greenfield. The Muslim Brotherhood supporters, okay, want to help Biden destroy American soldiers. This is a fascinating article for a whole bunch of different reasons, but the first and foremost is, are they really bringing in Islamic activists to investigate the United States military for extremism? And of course, extremism is this mythological white supremacy thing that they've been putting out there. Not that there isn't a very small amount of that someplace in the United States, but this is a created reality by the Marxists, by the Islamists, to try to destroy the United States military, make us weak so that we're easy to attack. No question, that's exactly what they're doing. And now, this is getting to a serious crisis level. And this is what is so outrageous about this. I'm going to read this in detail, okay? Because there are a couple names you need to know and what is happening right now. Hina Shamsi was fighting on behalf of the Holy Land Foundation. Now, remember, we've talked about that on this show many, many times, whose leaders had been convicted of providing material support to Hamas. And wait, that's so weird. Now it's Hamas again. As the head of the ACLU's National Security Project, Shamsi, a Pakistani citizen, had fought fiercely for the Islamic terrorists at Guantanamo Bay. Now the Pakistani advocate is advocating for Islamic terrorists, but in a new job, going after our soldiers. That was a quote from the article coming to us again from Jihad Watch. He's a list of partners for the Biden administration's crackdown on quote-unquote extremism in the military. Now, Faiza Patel, another Pakistani immigrant, who co-wrote an article arguing against designating the Muslim Brotherhood as a foreign terrorist organization. Okay, that pretty clear right there. Claiming that the Muslim Brotherhood is a religious organization, a political party, and a social service provider, even though it was showed the very clear connections to terrorism around the world. But yet, Shamsi and Patel aren't the worst list of partners for the Biden administration's countering extremism working group. The list also includes Wa'il Al-Zayat, who is the CEO of Mgage. Now, if you don't know what Mgage is, please go look it up. And its ties to jihadis and Islamism. That's just the start. So I'm going to post this article up on my website and also up on the Facebook and Gab pages. And again, go to Gab. It is the best out of all those out there. You've got to read this for yourself. They are literally bringing our enemies into the administration to investigate patriots who want to defend the Constitution and this republic. That's how bad this is, folks. That's how bad it is. All right. Next. This coming to us from Understanding the Threat. The Hamas which rocketed Israel is the same Hamas attacking Texas. The designated foreign terrorist organization Hamas, which rocketed Israel for 11 days, is the same group of terrorists undermining liberty and attacking Texas at all levels, quote unquote. Last week, pro-Hamas citizens of Dallas, Texas, protested a pro-Israel rally held near the intersection of I-635 and Preston Road and called for the destruction of Israel openly. There's a video there on the article. Also, a Hamas organization doing business as the Council on American Islamic Relations, or CARE, hosted a Muslim day at the Texas State Capitol in Austin this past January. This Hamas event has been held at the Texas State Capitol for 7 years. Furthermore, and this is also in the article, Texas House Bill 1231, which passed out of committee 9-2 and passed the Texas State House, now sits in the Senate Budget and Commerce Committee. This bill would make the Islamic celebration of Eid al-Fitr a state holiday. Members of Hamas doing business as Mgage, remember I just brought that organization up that's now tied directly to the Biden administration, the pretender, testified in favor of making this day of jihad remembrance a Texas state holiday. Literally, they want to make a day of jihad remembrance a Texas state holiday. You got to read this one. I'm going to post that one up too. Get educated on this stuff. Educate your friends and family on this stuff as well. Now, coming to the regional front, going to Oregon, this coming to us from Technocracy News. Oregon imposes vaccine passports and demands compliance. We are also hearing, I just got word yesterday that Governor Inslee is looking at doing this in Washington too. In fact, there is a policy that's already been drafted. Anyway, the fascist state of Oregon has become the first state to mandate vaccination in order to be able to take your face mask off when entering businesses, churches, government buildings, etc. Okay, here's the deal. It is government's job, burden, to prove there is an actual emergency. And a 99.5% survival rate for most Americans is not, by definition, an emergency. So they fail on that count. So therefore, everything they do according to that is unconstitutional. Everything. Number two, they have to prove causation. In other words, that you or the business you're going to is somehow causing this emergency, which they have never done and they cannot do. Number three, muzzles are used to psychologically change people's mindset so they accept slavery and subjugation easier. It's been done all over the world, goes back hundreds of years. We're not going to get into that today. But the fact of the matter is, whether I have a muzzle or not is none of your business. And oh, by the way, we now know masks conclusively are not effective. We talked about this last year. We did. They're not effective. It's ridiculous. Anybody who has studied biowarfare or been in the military and been a nuclear biological chemical officer or has it as an additional duty knows that if you actually are going into a biohazard situation, you should probably have overpressurized suits. You should have full body covering, not just some little mask, okay? And what's interesting is Bill Gates, when he did this weird video here a little while ago, actually had people in full biohazard suits on his desk. So he's kind of admitting it in a backhanded way. The Oregon Occupational Safety and Hazard Administration and other state agencies will enforce all of the new guidance. The OSHA spokesman, Aaron Corvin, explained that employers brushing off the diktat also would be investigated. We expect employers to comply, whichever route they take, allowing the vaccination exemption or sticking with current requirements. We will take and investigate complaints alleging employers aren't requiring face coverings, for example, or checking vaccination status. Here's the deal. Right now, this country is fracturing, and this is how they're trying to do it. And I have heard, again, this is coming in Washington, if it's not already here. Haven't had a chance to check on it today. We've got to stand up for our freedom and fight back right now. Stand with those businesses. Stand with those people who are fighting this unconstitutional, unproven attempt to take away our liberty. Which brings us to a very provocative article. I don't normally quote The American Mind, a publication of the Claremont Institute. But this article called Red Lines by Michael Anton actually bolsters the theory first put forward by Shelby Gallagher in a book called The Great State or A Great State. In that book, she theorized that what would happen is that states would begin pushing back against the federal government, and eventually the federal government would try to attack one of the states and force compliance, and other states would then band together to help that state, which would effectively redraw the lines of America. This is very interesting. That now there is an article out there essentially saying that the Constitution invites us and politics compels us to consider redrawing state and local borders. Now, he is advocating this from the sense of staving off any sort of permanent fracture. Quote, a reorganization of state, county, and city lines in America would be an act of statesmanship on the grandest scale since the Civil War, perhaps since the founding itself, for redeeming freedom. Okay. I find this very interesting that this is now going there. Now, we've been advocating Liberty State for a very long time, which is an opportunity to redraw state lines to better reflect the populace and better reflect the values, tradition, and culture of a particular area, which is why the founders left us the only mechanism, and I want to say this again, the only mechanism to redraw state lines was Article 4, Section 3 of the United States Constitution. Now, there's this movement to essentially secede by county that's happening. They call it the Greater Idaho Movement. The problem with that is it requires a supermajority vote to amend the state constitution. Virtually every state constitution in America has a provision to redraw its boundary lines, but it's an amendment to the constitution to do that because the boundary lines for the entire state, by county, by the way, are written into the constitution itself. And you can only do boundary adjustments for very small things that are not going to have an impact on the political shape of each state that is affected. There was a court case on this, very clear that it was only minor adjustments of boundary lines. So Article 4, Section 3, though, doesn't require a supermajority vote amending the constitution of each state. It just requires a simple majority vote of the state house and the state senate and the federal house and the federal senate to actually have the state created, which is what we're trying to do in Liberty State. So again, just from a practical perspective, the vote is easiest. The vote is most practical. The vote is most achievable. Article 4, Section 3. And go check it out for yourself. You can look at the whole history of that as well. All right. Lastly, on the regional front, exclusive interview with Idaho's Lieutenant Governor Janice McGeachin on challenging incumbent GOP Governor Brad Little. I'm gonna say this for everybody out there just as a point of discernment. People that have been tested by fire, those are the ones that you want. She is such a person. She has been tested by fire. She has been slammed. She's been smeared in the media. She's been attacked ruthlessly. And now she is running for governor of Idaho. This is what you look for. This coming to us from the New American. She fought Governor Little's lockdown response. She was at many anti-mask rallies. And she has repeatedly locked horns with Governor Little on his anti-freedom votes and approach to governing. So she has now announced, and she actually announced it in North Idaho, at Candlelight Christian Fellowship in Coeur d'Alene, her run for governor. I think everybody there should check out Janice McGeachin. And also, I personally have talked to her, and she is tested by fire. I'm just going to leave it at that. And that is the briefing. Remember, the antidote to dependency and socialism is to be a God-fearing, self-reliant, freedom-loving American. Thank you to everybody that has been praying for us. And thank you to everybody that came out again on Saturday at Worship in the Park and also on Sunday at our first service. We're planning on having our second service again at the Mirabeau Hotel this Sunday at 10 o'clock. And look forward to seeing you all there. Remember, Patriot Radio is broadcast live across all of Eastern Washington, North Idaho, and Northeast Oregon on the ACN network. It's replayed at 9 o'clock on Tuesday and Thursday on the same network, and we're also on iTunes, Podbean, Spotify, and Amazon. All right, it's my honor today to introduce a very special guest. Now, I kind of tipped my hand a little bit at the beginning of the show, but I do want to introduce Major General retired Donald McGregor. He is an accomplished national security leader, fighter pilot, career Air Force officer. He has been really at all different levels of the government, but he was a former lead advisor to the Chief of the National Guard Bureau, who is a member of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. So that's one of the highest levels of government. And in this lead advisor role, he was also the National Guard's Director of Strategy, Policy, Plans, and International Affairs, and developing overall strategy for the Secretary of Defense. And he was also civil support planning for the National Guard's warfighting homeland and international partnership missions. General McGregor, it's great to have you on Patriot Radio. Welcome, sir. How are you doing?
Great. Thank you, man.
So I want to talk about your article that you came out with. Absolutely fantastic. What the founders feared. What are we facing in this country right now? And having the view and the perspective that you have from being at the highest levels of government, what's real and what is not? And what should Americans be paying attention to right now?
Well, the reason for the article, why I came out discussing this, is, you know, after January 6th and the Capitol riots, you know, it took a very strange turn into something politicized and got, you know, truth became fiction, facts became fiction, and truth, became facts. It was just so bizarre where it was going. So anyways, the National Guard were involved with this, and somehow the Capitol riots became something much more than it was. They were caught in the middle of it, and they started issuing orders to them and activation orders that were questionable, inappropriate, and in some respects against public law.
So let's delve into that a little bit. The Defense Secretary literally overruled the National Guard chief in regards to keeping troops in Washington, D.C. at the Capitol. Let's set the stage a little bit. What is the law on when this is allowed, when this is legal, when this is constitutional, and when is it not, and what actually happened?
So that when they decided to go and plus up the already group that they had determined were going to cover the inaugural on the 21st, there was about 4,000 to 5,000, which we normally do for every inaugural, but they plussed it up to 26,000 because of the Capitol riots. Normally, it requires a threat assessment to do a plus-up like that, where they go and look at what is the possible threat, what indicators are they using, and then they go and use that to justify the requirement to activate our guardsmen under this threat. There was none of that was accomplished. When they started plussing this up, the guard chief came out and opposed it and said there's nothing in here that really requires it. And he was overturned by the secretary, but the secretary, just not overturning it, Matt, he made one critical, to me, unconstitutional step in the wrong direction, which was he was going to involuntarily activate these guardsmen to a duty status that was, to me, unconstitutional. And what I mean by that is that when the mission they were going to be assigned to was security, perimeter security. That was going to involve search, seize, and arrest. Basically, it was allowing our military to police our citizens. That is an unconstitutional, it's against not only public law, it's against every DOD directive and regulation. So he was ignoring and disregarding DOD regulation, and he was also usurping public law. That is the reason why the guard chief went against it, was overruled, and why I wrote, hey, this is something that needs to be brought out and make the secretary to try to understand that he cannot, violate public law like this and use our military to police our citizens. There's a specific reason why we can't do that.
Well, let's talk a little bit about Posse Comitatus, and also, did the governors give consent when he overruled the guard chief?
The governors never gave consent, in my understanding. There were certain governors that did provide consent for them to be activated. The only governor, or the only adjutant general governor that I know of that actually denied it was General McGuire out of Arizona, where he wrote a letter back to them basically telling them exactly what I just told you, that this is not a legal status and very questionable, and that it is not in our best interest for our guardsmen to be activated under this. Unfortunately, he was the only adjutant general to do this. Now, since then, after the inaugural and the continuation of the militarization of our capital, many of the governors and adjutant generals have refused to give troops because of what I just told you, and also the ongoing militarization of D.C., which has no rationale or reason behind it.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the reason behind this. If they didn't do a threat assessment, then there is no actual basis for them to be there, and we'll talk about Title 32 here in a second, but there's no actual basis for them to be there. What's this really about, and what are you hearing?
Well, this is a politicization of an event. You know, when you lack the facts or the threatened military terms, the threat analysis, which really generates the requirement for whatever you're going to accomplish, if it lacks that, now you're going down to a road of politicizing the event. Congress got my understanding and what I heard inside. I still have contacts inside the Pentagon. And what I had heard is Congress put pressure on the Department of Defense to do these things. Now, I will tell you, in the Department of Defense's defense, no pun intended, they never activated them under involuntarily. However, they did activate them voluntarily to a mission that they were unlawfully able to do. And there's a difference between the two. This was, my understanding, a political pressure from Congress for them to do this. This is what I've been hearing.
So were they activated under Title 32? And if you can't explain that to the listeners.
Yeah, they were activated under Title 32. There's three activations for the Guard. They are unique out of all the military members with these activations. One, they can be activated under state active duty, which is strictly the governor. Two, they can be activated under Title 32, which is what they were in Washington, D.C., and that can be done by the President of the United States and delegated down to the Secretary of Defense and then the Secretaries of the Army and Air Force. And then they can be activated under Title 10 within our borders, but only under a presidential declaration of an emergency or an insurrection act. And none of that was accomplished for them to be under Title 10. That actually would have allowed them to do search, seize, and arrest, but that is a rare order that they would be given. So they elected to try activate them under Title 32. And I don't want to, you know, get the listeners too confused because it gets complicated, Matt. But within the District of Washington, D.C., a guardsman can only be activated under Title 32. They cannot be activated under their state authority. So every guardsman coming in from Virginia, Pennsylvania, Idaho, California, when they enter into the Washington District, they have to be under Title 32. So the secretary was limited, really quite limited to Title 32. And this is where the constitutional problem lies, is because in that activation order, it specifically says you can't do search, seize, and arrest, which is what they were doing under the mission they were given. And they continue to do it until they leave Washington. They still are, unlawfully doing a mission that they're constitutionally shouldn't be doing.
Well, and I think that you've alluded to one thing that's concerning everybody, and that is the indefinite nature of this so-called mission. It doesn't seem like this is going to end. It doesn't seem like they're really putting a lot of boundaries around this. This really then becomes a constitutional crisis, not just the fact that this is being done wrong, but also the fact that this is going to continue indefinitely or at least into the foreseeable future.
Well, Matt, if you think about it, the fact that the secretary is going down this path is, you know, there, it's really the, you have a executive, you know, a cabinet member within the executive branch that is usurping congressional authority, which is the public law that says you can't do this. There's your constitutional crisis. You've got these balance of powers that one is usurping the other without any you know, play between the two, and really the Supreme Court's supposed to do this, but I doubt that'll ever happen. But this is the problem that we're in right now. So I'm really wondering, when I worked with the secretary when I was in the Pentagon, there's a lot of smart people and very, very, I would just say, a lot of good patriots and people that want to accomplish the mission. But they're being pushed politically inside their and they ending up making bad decisions, and decisions that I hope they don't regret. But it's leading us down a road where we're now institutionally, we've seen a corruptness and a breakdown that now we look at our original Constitution as a document, and now we're questioning that. That, I believe, is the problem.
I do as well. And we can have the debate on a standing army and how big it should be, but having a standing army in the Capitol, clearly the founding fathers were against that unanimously. Their debates bear that out. And I see this not just happening in the Capitol, but potentially in other major cities in the United States. And I think that that's where people are becoming alarmed, that this could become a precedent for this in not just the Capitol, but other cities in the United States of America.
Exactly. You hit the nail on the head. Washington, D.C. is symptomatic of a larger problem here. So if they get away, and I will tell you, I'll use those harsh words, get away with, allowing this constitutional issue to go on. This is just a test bed for what's going to happen outside of the district. You know, once you are allowed without challenge to be able to commit something in maybe a wrongful or an ignorant manner, then, and it's unchallenged, it will start to seep into every single issue, every crisis, every riot. It doesn't matter what happens. My concern here also is the fact of where the military's going with this a little bit of a sort of a Marxism, socialism kind of atmosphere that's eking its way into the military and sort of drowning out some conservative voices. Because even though we're talking about a constitutional crisis about activations and one group usurping the other, we cannot disconnect it from what's currently going in the military. I believe a lot of this is tied together, and this is really, I've written on this also. I think this is also a grave concern for us, because for example, the hypocrisy of the riots was what happened and what was different about last summer's riots. We had 2,000 police officers injured, almost $2 billion in damage, thousands of businesses destroyed, violence, murders, destruction. And yet, we talk about that, but we can't talk about the Capitol riots and can contrast the two and put them into perspectives that if we have to treat each the same and put it in what I call a commensurate response. Last summer, a commensurate response would have been, hey, we need to get law and order. The Capitol riots commensurate response was, listen, this was a one-item deal where we should take a look at why it happened and what do we do in the future to stop it and what was really the cause of that. Because I think in the discovery phase there, you're going to find a lot of unexpected truths about why the Capitol riots happened and really what happened inside that rally.
But, I think what's really baffling about this entire approach is, and as a former Guard officer myself, the use of the National Guard is only ever supposed to be temporary for exigent circumstances. If they know that there needs to be increased security at the Capitol, you bring up a great question in the article. Why are they not pursuing a long-term law enforcement approach to this? And instead, we're actually hearing echoes out of Washington, D.C. of what's happening around the country that the police should be defunded. Why aren't they taking a law enforcement approach to this? What is right and what does right look like in this scenario from that perspective?
Well, there's a couple reasons. I believe there's a couple reasons, in my opinion, is number one, they do not have the resources inside of D.C. to police it at a level that they want to police it at. The level is the issue. And we go back to the threat assessment. Why are they there? Why do we need thousands of them to be able to go and police an area where they have had little to no indications that there's going to be any unrest or any kind of bad reactions in D.C.? So when you take a look at that, you go and take a look at the level, and the level that they're actually saying it is, which I think is inflated, the Capitol Police don't have the resources. So many times, to be honest with you, Matt, and you probably saw this too when you were in guard duty, they like to use the guard and they like to use the military because I call it free chicken. They're able to go out there and get, have the Department of Defense in the federal side of the house, which is a large organization with lots of money, to be able to go in and be able to perform their duties. And I'm not necessarily against all of that because we perform great duties for the civil service of our citizens. However, in this particular case and why I wrote the article, the duties they're performing are unconstitutional and they shouldn't be doing it. You're absolutely right, Matt. The policing effort should be by those organizations that are authorized to perform those duties. Otherwise, the military is policing our citizens that with the greatest fear of our founding fathers.
General McGregor, there's one other thing that really has been sticking in my craw for several months, and that is this idea that the Guard soldiers that were there and are there in D.C. needed to be vetted again. Every national security clearance, which is for every member of the military, is always ongoing. So this idea that they needed to be vetted again really stood out to me as not being real, as having maybe an agenda behind it, just from the practical aspect of I know what that consists of. The vetting process is ongoing. What is your take on that, and what have you heard in regards to that for the Guard members that have been deployed there to D.C.?
Mm-hmm. Well, I can tell you right off of that. It was completely unwarranted. It was politicized. The Capitol riot somehow went from a disenfranchised group of voters who were voicing, and some unfortunately violently voicing, their concern over the election, to somehow this was a racial issue within our racial extremist issue within our military. Now, how did this leap within literally 24 to 48 hours after January 6th? From this disenfranchised group of voters to somehow we have a problem in the military with extremists. It was a politicized leap. That's what it was. And it was a propagation, a narrative that they jumped on and owned, and there was very little resistance to it, which was really unfortunate. And I have written on that because what will happen and what eventually happened is the Guard became the target. They got rid of, it wasn't just 12 people, a dozen. They got rid of over 40, Matt, and wow, took them off the security detail for what I would call inappropriate review and questionable review of what I considered their private social media accounts. And that is probably going to end up in court at some point or another, and it should be challenged. Because what happens is it really literally went unchallenged. So now they're emboldened. So the next step is, well, it's not just the Guard. Let's go and make this the entire military. And then they come into the military, and now they become an extremist issue in the military. Well, if you take a look at the statistics, to your point is, what is driving all this? Nothing's driving this but politics. Because the actual fact, say, if you take a look at just the people who entered into the building, Capitol building, there was 900 roughly. There have been over 400 arrests. Most of them now are being thrown out by lower court judges for little ludicrous reasons. They're being thrown out because it was a ridiculous charge. 40 of those have been a military member that's been affiliated with the military, whether retired or current. If you take a look at the percentages, that's 5% of the 900 that entered into the Capitol. Now, if you take 2020, the FBI investigated 68 military members for extremist ideas or indications. 68 out of 20 million veterans and current military members. That's 0.00003% of the military population. And yet the secretary did a stand down for this, and now we're going and putting a guy by the name of Bishop Garrison, who is unfortunately a radical left wing person, in charge of now going in and doing further extensive examination of extremists. And here's the interesting thing, Matt. They're going in and examining a term they haven't even defined yet. And the reason they can't define it is because it doesn't exist. They're fishing for a problem because they put a political narrative on this, and now it's at the expense of our military. But I'm telling you, Matt, it will come to every American's front door if we don't nip this in the bud right now.
I found it interesting, too, that former FBI agent John Guandolo on Understanding the Threat laid out very clearly the connections between Hamas-related organizations and people that were being put into this so-called extremist council to root it out. I'm stunned because literally they are putting people in that were found to be unindicted co-conspirators in the Holy Land Foundation trial, the largest terror financing trial ever successfully prosecuted in U.S. history. Some of those people that are connected to those organizations are now coming in to vet the military and rid the military of extremism. This seems like a purge, and I'd like to get your comment on that. And then even more specifically, this Space Force commanding officer who was relieved and accused of being an extremist or having extremist tendencies as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, I can tell you just in one quick response to the extremist issue, they assigned a guy by the name of Bishop Pierce, and I'm sure he's a great guy, but he has very left-leaning thoughts and ideologies. They put him in charge of the entire review of the extremist issue within the military. He has been on Twitter. He has published his visceral anti-Trump tweets. To the point that I think if he had still been in the military, he would have been marked an extremist. So they put this guy in charge, which is really unfortunate because now you've got basically a very tainted review. And to your point, this is more along the lines of crushing any progressive dissent than it is about finding an extremist, because you're more likely to get struck by lightning than find an extremist in the United States military. Now, I can tell you about the lieutenant colonel who now has a commander-directed investigation against him and was fired from his command position at Space Command for the comments he made on a podcast and a little bit out of the book that he wrote about the infiltration of Marxism and socialism within the military. I will tell you, I've seen several IG, what they call Inspector General investigations in the military. There's a two-way street here, man. Right now, all we're hearing about is the commander-directed investigation. So his commander who fired him is directing an investigation. There is going to be a discovery period here where they're going to have to review every single directive, every issue, what can he, can't he do, what did he say and what did he not say. But also, the young man, and I highly recommend him to do this, file his own IG complaint against his commander for a wrongful termination of his command. That will also involve a discovery piece, just like a court case. And it needs to be done.
I completely agree. In the last couple minutes that we have left, where can people go to find out more information about you and take a look at the article that you've written?
Yeah, I am on LinkedIn, and they can go on LinkedIn and do a search, go onto my profile, and I have my articles posted there on what I've done, and they should be able to get not only what we talked about, the constitutional article, but the one I wrote about the extremist issue as well.
Really appreciate you being on today. Thank you very much for your perspective. Retired Major General Donald McGregor, keep up the fight. Thank you for shining a light in on this to preserve the integrity of our republic.
Absolutely. Thank you, ma'am.
All right. Again, you can find retired Major General Donald McGregor on LinkedIn. You can go to his LinkedIn profile. He's got many of his articles there. Also, The New American picked up his article entitled What the Founders Feared. So you can find that on thenewamerican.com. And if you have not gone to The New American, please check it out. Again, it's something I quote from a lot because it's so accurate, thenewamerican.com. And that was retired Major General Donald McGregor. And he wouldn't want me to do this, but I'm gonna do it a little bit. He is a very decorated officer, Defense Superior Service Medal, Legion of Merit, Meritorious Service Medal with two bronze oak leaf clusters. Air Medal, Air Force Commendation Medal, Army Commendation Medal, Air Force Achievement Medal, and it goes down. He's got a huge list. This is a decorated Army Air Force officer, but with some Army commendations, which is rare, okay? It's not, doesn't happen all the time. He also was a fighter pilot, and he was part of the highest levels of the National Guard Bureau, particularly directing strategy, policy, and plans. Homeland Security, interagency, intergovernmental, and multinational coordination and civil support missions. This guy knows exactly what he's talking about. And the fact of the matter is, what's happening in Washington, D.C., with the deployment of the National Guard there, is very constitutionally dubious. It is very legally dubious, and it needs to be challenged, and it needs to be challenged quickly. So any of those folks that have been there, especially the ones that were dismissed after being vetted or so-called vetted, need to challenge this. This cannot continue because it presents a crisis and more importantly, a potential precedent to be used in the future. Want to end with a couple things as well. I want to go back to this article. It was on Jihad Watch, and then also UTT did a little bit more on some of the connections with Hamas and the Pretenders administration. But this Countering Extremism Working Group has partnerships with organizations that were unindicted co-conspirators in the Holy Land Foundation trial. Okay, just so we're clear. And this is the group that's supposed to come in and rid the military of extremism. The word asinine comes to mind. We need to protect our republic, everybody. I'm going to be posting these up on the social media pages. Tonight, the church at Planned Parenthood, 7 o'clock, down on Indiana, here in Spokane. Look forward to seeing you all there. The church at Planned Parenthood, 7 o'clock, down on Indiana, in Spokane. Blessings to all of you. And remember, it's going to take all of us to do this. It's time right now to stand up. This is Matt Shea. Thank you once again for joining me on Patriot Radio. May God bless all of you, and may he make this generation the greatest one. Keep up the fight.